The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite Lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast universe of lore behind the Mass Effect games. We'll talk about all the details you may have missed, ask the hard questions, and more.
Spectres, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots, and I'm here with N7 the Legend, as usual. And N7, you brought along a friend today. You made a friend.
I did, you know, and it's actually thanks to the last mods video that we put on YouTube, as you know, well as other places. But you know how much of a fan of mods that I am.
I do. I love mods too. Yes.
My mod list is ever growing, especially for Mass Effect. So we have one of the best known modders in the Mass Effect community joining us today. He's worked on plenty of stuff that I think our listeners have probably played before, and ones that we've talked about recently, like the Spectre expansion mods, the diversification project, and the expanded galaxy mod, and even Take Earth Back, and his very own Audimus's Happy Ending mod. So I'd like to welcome Audimus to the show. We're happy to have you here.
Hello. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome to the show. I mean, obviously, we've been talking about your work and are very grateful for the things that you've been working on. But this was a big surprise for me. N7 reached out and he's like, hey, how do you feel about having one of our favorite modders on? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Awesome. That sounds awesome. So big welcome to the show. I hope the community is excited to get to meet you as well. But I know N7 and I have been drumming up some questions. We've got some questions for you. We want to dig into your brain because we are the people who play the games and nerd out about the games. You're one of the guys who gets in the guts of the games and adds stuff, changes things around. So to kick this off, when did you get into Mass Effect?
I got into Mass Effect when I was 10 years old, when the game first came out.
So you're like an OG player. Mass Effect 1.
Yes.
Yeah, Sam and I go back to that.
Respect.
Yeah.
Nice.
What, is that 15 years now? Oh my God.
It was a very long time ago.
Yeah.
So I'm probably one of the few fans at this point that can say that they've been a fan of Mass Effect for over half their life, which is a weird thing to think about. But yeah, I got Mass Effect on the original Xbox when it came out. Been playing it ever since. I switched over to PC gaming just before ME3 came out, and played through on there. And then after that came out, I started thinking about, you know, this game would be really cool if it was moddable. And so started thinking about that. And then I, the ending thing happened.
And, right, the big, and you're talking about the different endings and the big debate about the way it ended, and some people were not
the big
happy
controversy.
About it. Yeah.
Yes. At the time, I was a very toxic 14-year-old, so I was off on the BioWare forums ranting away about how BioWare had betrayed us and how we needed to demand a new ending.
Yeah, I have a theory that half of our ills on the internet are just caused by bored teenagers. Plays into that theory.
Yeah, the internet is, I think, primarily composed of toxic teenagers.
Yeah. So are you saying that you actually got into modding because of Mass Effect?
Yes. I knew about modding before because I modded Knights of the Old Republic. I was I played around with the modding community for that, but I was only sort of like peripherally involved. I talked to a few modders. I mainly just installed mods, so I wasn't like involved in modding. But yeah, so I took a break from Mass Effect for about a year, just kind of detox. And when I came back, I replayed through the trilogy again and played through all of the DLCs for ME3. And that was when I got to experience the Citadel DLC, which is kind of what really made me fall back in love with the franchise again. And after playing through it, I thought, actually, this DLC would make a lot of sense if it was like the epilogue to the game, because the tone of it kind of really fits as like a postscript kind of story. So I did some Googling to see, you know, if anyone else had that idea, and that led me to the ME3 Explorer forums and the Citadel Epilogue mod, and that kind of roped me into kind of lurking within the modding community. Though I'd been sort of lurking on those forums, not really talking to anybody, but just downloading lots of mods, kind of seeing how everything worked. And then about, when was it? Late 2018, I met Tidius, who was the creator of the Spectre expansion mod. And we got to talking. It was very exciting talking to him, because both of us had all of these really cool ideas about, you know, ways that the game could be fleshed out and how we could explore some of the areas that BioWare had kind of touched on in like Cerberus Daily News and some of the comics, but hadn't really touched on in the games.
There was cut content too. They had intended to do a lot more than they were able to get out by release. So
yeah, so much cut content.
Yeah, so that stuff was inspirational as well.
Sorry, you cut out.
We're going overseas here with our Zoom call. I was asking, that stuff was inspirational too, then, some of the content. So a combination of your ideas and the other ideas that never got fleshed out.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think what's so amazing about cut content is it's kind of the bridge that turns fan fiction into legitimacy.
Yeah.
Because you can take a concept that the writers originally wanted to do, but couldn't because of time or budget or whatever, and then you can restore it, or you can kind of figure out how to put it back into the game in a way that makes sense.
Knights of the Old Republic 2 is a really good example of that. There's a lot of content in there. I remember that, the modding community around that back in the day, trying to finish the game, quote unquote, when BioWare didn't actually finish it.
So Onimus, what was one of the biggest inspirations of this cut content, or, you know, extra game content like Cerberus Daily News or the comics? What was one of those pieces from that served as a pretty big inspiration for you?
I think for me, it was the Ralloy, because I thought that it was really interesting that there was this entire new species that had just been introduced, but we never got to see them. And so we spent a lot of time talking about how they could factor into the war, what the situation on Tervest would be like, you know, would maybe some members of that species not want to isolate and they'd want to try and get involved in the war, because they don't feel like the government's making the right decision and trying to hide. And so we came up with all sorts of ideas on, you know, how they could be reintroduced by text adventures and things like that.
So, and of course, they come up in the Spectre expansion mod.
Yes, they do.
Yes.
So I believe the one of the text adventures that we wrote together was this series of text adventures about like backroom deals that were going on between the Elcor and the Ralloy. That the Elcor were basically smuggling Ralloy off world in order to fight on the front lines. And their government was very unhappy about that. So you kind of had to like step in and be a diplomat in that situation.
Wow. So, okay. So the picture you're painting for me here, and I think this is cool, especially from the perspective of what we do on this show, is that this expansion of the lore is what motivated you to make actual in-game content and changes and DLC. It wasn't so much like a lot of modders will do things like they'll add in some new guns or they'll tweak some of the gameplay or whatever, but you're really coming at this from a lore standpoint.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I've always been super passionate about Mass Effect's lore. I mean, I feel like at this point I would describe my knowledge of the lore as like encyclopedic. I've read the codex multiple times. I know the canon inside and out. I know all the stuff that is like almost canon because it was cut content. And so having that kind of knowledge means that you can kind of, it's kind of like a blessing and a curse, because it means that you can see all of the things that just weren't realized.
Yeah.
And when you have the ability to bring that stuff back, you kind of can't help yourself. So that's my inspiration.
Yeah. With the Spectre expansion mod and some of the other mods that we worked on, like Take Earth Back, and I know you were a contributor for the Expanded Galaxy mod, how much of the stuff that you did and you implemented into the game was 100% canon, and then how much of that was just a logical extrapolation from what we knew?
I would say maybe half of it is canon and the other half is either inspired by canon or kind of like spins off from it in some way. I don't think much of it is like completely new stuff. All of it is based on what you think.
That's crazy to me, because I, like, as like, I'm a huge Mass Effect fan myself. I started playing back in 2007, and with the Spectre expansion mod, with the Expanded Galaxy mod, Take Earth Back, Happy Ending mod, so much of this stuff, the new content that's in there, I find a very hard time distinguishing between whether or not this was canon, either through extra game sources or something that the modder themselves kind of wrote into the game. And so much of that is so seamlessly interwoven into the gameplay that I have to congratulate both you and your fellow modders that worked on that.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think Titus would be over the moon to hear such high praise, because he worked very, very hard and he poured his heart and soul into writing for that mod. So, yeah.
So I've got a question, and this is kind of tangential to that. So much, very often, I guess we could say, whether it comes to games like Fallout or Cyberpunk, in fact, over the last few years, a lot of times the studios themselves will actually hire modders into their studios because of the work they've done on the mods. And it sounds like that's like if I was working for BioWare and I was ramping up for a new game, having guys like you as part of the team would seem like a very smart thing to do. Is that something you've ever considered doing? Is it a goal for you?
For me personally, no. Just because I have my own career. I work in motion design, so I'm an animator. Mm-hmm. Very happy doing that. I just consider the modding part of, you know, I consider it a hobby that kind of tangentially ties into what I do for a living. But no, I have spoken to BioWare devs about maybe coming over to their studio and, you know, meeting the team, things like that. But yeah, for me personally, not really interested in making it into a career, but I know that some modders in the community very much are.
It seems like such a natural pathway, because it's like you're putting together a resume of your work ahead of time, a portfolio, and saying, hey, I'm already capable of doing this job. Why don't we work together?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the time the modding can really depend on what engine you're working with, because when you're modding Mass Effect Trilogy, you're working in Unreal Engine 3, which is at this point a dead game engine. So the knowledge that you're working with is kind of outdated. The foundational skills are obviously there. Mm-hmm. If you're working on more of the programming side of modding, then obviously that's super transferable. But a lot of the time when you're modding, you have to learn very specific practices that might not be very applicable to other levels of game design. So I think that if any modder is interested in making that leap over to the professional industry, they have to think about, you know, what talents are they putting into modding and how transferable is that? Because, for example, I think that the writing is very transferable.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that if you're really good at knowing the lore and being able to write in the same style as the, vanilla script requires, then obviously you would be a very, very good asset towards the writing team.
I would imagine that if you understand the lore, if you're good at the writing, if you have some good ideas for mods, then as a developer, if I was hiring, I would assume, okay, this is the kind of person who I can teach them the tools. I can teach, if they're not familiar with Unreal 5 yet and they've been working on 3, I can spend the time and money to bring them up to speed on that, because they have the stuff that I can't teach them or would take forever to teach. A passion for the game, interest in the lore, an understanding of the universe, all of those things have to kind of come with the person, right?
Yeah.
So
for sure.
That would be my perspective. Now, I've got another question when it comes to the tech side of this. As far as I understand, Mass Effect games don't have like official modding tools. Sometimes developers put those out. They want to help their community. Cyberpunk just committed to doing that. As somebody who's not a coder myself, I've only dabbled in this a little bit. How difficult is it to kind of crack open the game engine in order to adjust some things?
Okay, so this is a bit of a loaded question, because Mass Effect is a bit of an anomaly in the modding space, because you very, very rarely see games moddable to the extent that the Mass Effect trilogy is without having any mod support whatsoever.
Interesting. Okay.
Because if you look at the most popular mods or like modding communities, like the Bethesda games, The Witcher, Dragon Age, Terraria, like all of those have some kind of official developer support.
Yeah.
But Mass Effect not only has zero official support, but it also uses a forked version of Unreal Engine 3 that BioWare made modifications to that are incredibly unfriendly towards any kind of like modification. In the early days, the fact that mods even worked was like an accident. It was just like we hacked together some kind of Jenga tower that somehow didn't fall over. So
that's awesome.
Things are much better these days, but yeah, it used to be, I think things have changed now, but it used to be a very, very high barrier to entry.
Did How Legendary
much did Legendary Edition?
Yeah. Did Legendary Edition change this?
Question.
Yes. It just makes sense.
So the interesting thing about Legendary Edition was that it was a fresh start for the community. I think there's been, like, you can go out and read articles that say things like, you know, Legendary Edition made things super easy for modders. And that is true to an extent. But actually, the reason that it's so much easier for modders, beyond things like having 64-bit, which means that we don't have to deal with memory limitations, or them standardizing some of the file formats under the hood, which means you can port assets between the different games a bit easier. The thing that really helped make things so much easier for the modding community was that we could start from ground zero with a more robust code base for the toolset. Because the original games were built, like all of the mods, were built on very primitive versions of the tools. And then as the tools advanced and more advanced mods released, they had to exist in the same ecosystem as those original very primitive mods that were kind of jankily built together. And so by sort of 2020, when we were reaching the kind of death throes of the original trilogy modding community, it was an awful time for mods, because any mod that you released had to deal with like 10 different compatibility patches for other mods. You had to deal with the memory limitations because everyone was using a lot of textures, which meant everyone's like ceiling for memory was like right below the cap.
Yeah.
And also you had to deal with other things like, you know, not being able to do certain features in modding. So the fact that we were able to start fresh in Legendary Edition while also having the most modern up-to-date version of the toolset meant that we could create an ecosystem from scratch and make sure that we set ourselves up for success moving forward.
That's awesome.
So that's really what made everything so much better for us. Like the the community patch framework. We've also built in like new merge mod functionality. So a lot of it was done on the tooling side rather than in Sad Legendary Edition itself.
I'm glad that you bring up the original trilogy versus Legendary Edition, because I had a specific question about that as it pertains to mods. You know, if anyone that goes on Nexus, anyone that checks out the original trilogy and all the mods for those, it seems like that library is huge. And of course, there's been many more years that have passed while that was the only option. But it's 2022 now. And Legendary Edition just came out last year, and it's still, you know, an old game overall. It's more or less, you know, a remake of the original trilogy. But that being said, the modding community still seems to be pretty active for a game whose base content is still very old. Does that surprise you? And what are you seeing behind the scenes that we might not be?
I think that, yeah, I think I am kind of surprised. So I became an active modder in 2018, 2019. My first mod release was a lot of videos. And it wasn't really until Legendary Edition where I started really getting involved in mods. But in that time, before Legendary Edition, the community was very small. There was only about 24 mod devs, only maybe a dozen were ever active at one time. So there wasn't really a lot going on. And it really did feel at the time like the community was really on its deathbed. And Legendary Edition very much saved us in that regard. And so I think that the fact that we were able to hit the ground running and make things so much more open and accessible for everyone meant that people were more interested in coming in. Because I think that back in the early days of modding, the barriers to entry were so high that a lot of people got turned off. And because it's so much more accessible and because, you know, the community is so welcoming and friendly and wants to see itself grow, we're seeing a lot more growth. And I also just think that Mass Effect is a really special franchise and people really, really care about it. And so I think that you get a disproportionately high number of really passionate fans who want to go in and just do masochistic things to make the games run better or look better or play better.
We see that here, I mean, within our own community, right? That, like I just said, the game is not new by any stretch, but we still have a decent group of people who listen to the show who are, you know, still very into it. You mentioned something about that it's, you know, the modding community is very active and it's growing and these barriers are not there that were once there. How does that translate into one of the community's most beloved mods, the Expanded Galaxy mod? I know that you've been a contributor, so you've probably been talking back and forth with some of the mod authors on that. But as people who mod Mass Effect know, the Expanded Galaxy mod for the original Mass Effect 3 still much more robust than what we have right now in Legendary Edition. Is there any sign that you've seen that we might be able to expect tangible growth in that mod?
Yeah, for sure. So obviously the Expanded Galaxy mod is the biggest Mass Effect mod and years of work went into it. So having to rebuild all of that from scratch, and you know, King Kajiro, the lead developer of the mod, he does most of the work. My contributions to EGM have been relatively small. I helped like redo all of the videos. I helped do some testing. I helped, you know, do some little bits of writing. But he's doing all of the work in terms of like making the files and rebuilding everything. So that means that the process can be slow. And also, sadly, EGM has features in the original trilogy that can't come to Legendary Edition. For example, Arc Mod, that sub mod of EGM created new N7 missions from the multiplayer maps, but because the multiplayer maps aren't in Legendary Edition, it can't unfortunately be remade unless we figure out a way to port the maps over and like redo all the lighting and materials. But that would be a very, very big challenge. So,
but if they brought back multiplayer, then theoretically,
yes, that could, it would be 100% possible. Yeah,
if those same maps were also brought back specifically, yes, that would be the crux of it. Yeah,
yeah. I know that there is a new update for EGM coming fairly soon. I don't have specific dates, but the Miranda mod is coming out very soon. So that will be a new submod of EGM that's coming back. I know that the plan is to kind of not bring every single feature over. I know that based on some discussions that we had, we realized that maybe there were some things that, while cool, they didn't really add much. And so the value in rebuilding them is kind of on the lower side. Mm-hmm. But I do think at this point, EGM is mostly into it, other than really Arc Mod and Miranda Mod, which is coming soon, and some of the like Normandy ambient events, pretty much all of the features are back now. So I think EGM is maybe 80% rebuilt. So I feel like within maybe 6 months, we should be pretty much there with EGM. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you got to do a cost analysis on your time and effort for getting the best stuff in, you know, especially while things are still hot and people are still excited about things. So I've got a question for you. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the things that you've worked on, do you have something that you're like most proud about? Do you have like a shining star? Like, oh, I accomplished this.
Yes. So for the original trilogy, the only mod that I released, even though I did contribute to a lot of other mods, but the only mod that I released was a lot of videos, which, if you're not aware, was which is basically a lot of textures for all of the pre-rendered videos in the game. So they were upscaled and sharpened to 4K resolution. And so for Legendary Edition, I went and remade that much better this time. All of the videos look crystal clear.
Nice.
And they're all running at 60 frames per second now. So I'm obviously very proud of that, because the amount of logistical planning that goes into remastering 500 videos is no small feat.
I bet. So the old ones look kind of blocky still too. So that must have been, I mean, do you use like an AI system of some sort? Like, how do you?
Yeah. So there was a whole process for it that you can read on the mod page, but the short version is that we looked at the videos that were shipped in Legendary Edition and realized that they hadn't really done a very good job upscaling them.
Right.
It felt like they'd only just been up res a little bit and compressed less. Some of them were great because they'd been re-recorded. They remade them inside Legendary Edition's engine, but a lot of them were not really up to standard. And also we found in a lot of cases, you could downscale the video to 720p, save a frame, upscale it to 4K, zero difference. They were still fundamentally 720p quality.
Huh.
Terms of like pixel density. And so that added an additional step for us, which meant that we had to go every single shot of every single video and figure out what the true resolution of that video was. Then we had to figure out the best AI upscaling model for it. Then we had to figure out the best sharpening and denoising settings for it. And then we had to go through and make, well, I went through and made like post corrections in After Effects, like fixing like flickering or blocky artifacts or things like that.
Wow.
And that was a process that had to be done for 500 videos.
Yeah. So this isn't like just putting it through some sort of processing or something. This is like a whole, like everyone was hand adjusted the way it needed to be.
Yeah. So in the original version of a lot of videos, because the AI technology wasn't super robust back then, we used gigapixel AI. We just turned all the videos into PNGs, ran them through to 4K, stuck them back together. But with this one, we were using Video Enhanced AI, which has different models. So we were like previewing them, analyzing the differences between each of the different upscales on these preview frames, figuring out which one looked the best, and then stitching all of this together shot by shot, video by video, until we had the absolute best version of all of these videos. And I'm very, very proud of how that project came together.
Where are players going to notice that the most in their playthrough? Like, let's just talk from a layman's perspective.
Yeah.
Someone who's not used to modding at all, when they install this mod, where are they going to see it and notice, like, man, that looks good?
You're going to see it straight away.
The first video, right? Yeah. Like, you can see the compression and the blockiness in it.
Yeah. You launch Mass Effect 2. The beginning of Mass Effect 2 is like a 2-minute long video.
Yeah.
You launch that and see that at stunning 4K 60 FPS, and you're going to notice a difference. So, yeah, I really do think it's a must-have mod that everyone should be using, because it just makes the game look properly remastered.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense, because this is one of the places where game developers will actually cut the size of the download for their game. They'll overly compress the video, and then, like, this is one place they can cut stuff out. So to be able to kind of reinsert that back in the way it quote unquote should be from the beginning is just awesome. Well, I know we've got some more questions for you. We're going to take a mid break. We're going to thank our patrons. We've got some new reviews. And in the meantime, chat, I know you guys are hanging out. If you have any questions you'd like to post, feel free to share that stuff. But don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this station is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show, and we've got some new patrons to shout out. Thanks, big, big thanks to Rowan, Kent L, Shep Vakirian 888, and Eli A. Thanks so much for your support. Welcome to the Patreon. And a big shout out to our Shepherd tier patrons as well. Koka Shins, Captain Shanko, Kira C, Lieutenant Tosino, Pipe Man Studios, and Shep Vakirian and William. Man, so many of you guys, so much support. All 66
so many shepherds.
Of you guys. So many shepherds. You guys must like this stuff and our show and stuff, I guess. Thank you. Thank you so much for the support. We are, what, 1 week away from our end of the month patron episode. So we're recording this on Friday nights now. And so coming up, this will be the first Friday night patron chat coming up on the 30th. So make sure if you are a tier four or higher patron that if you'd like to join us, it's Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And if you don't live in one of those time zones, then Google it. It'll adjust it for you. We live in the future. Not quite as far as the future as Mass Effect, but far enough in the future that you can do time zone calculations. So thank you again to all of our patrons. And if you are interested in checking out what you can get or signing up before the patron chat coming up in just a week, then go to patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast. Also, we've got some new reviews to read out. It's been a few weeks because we doubled up on the last episode. So this one is from AMF99 in the US, who wrote in on Apple Podcasts. Love the show. 5 stars. Great content. This show renewed my love for the game. I have learned so much about the history of Mass Effect. I normally listen to the show on my phone on my way to work or when I'm doing home doing dishes. I also listen to podcasts while doing dishes, so this is awesome. Keep up the good work. Also, I'm totally Team Ashley. I could not stand Caden. I think this is just the right time right now to ask Audimus, are you Team Ashley or Team Caden? What do you think?
Thank you. I was going to ask.
Oh, yeah. That's really mean. Why are you gonna do this?
Which one? You got to pick one.
I love all my children equally.
I know, okay. Right?
All right. I'm going to be Team Ashley just because I feel like she gets a bad rap from fans.
I think that was the right
spicy
answer.
Spicy takes. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a big Ashley stan, so I'm glad that you said that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, so is AMF. Yeah. So they can't stand Caden. P.S. Do you guys have a Discord chat? Yes, we do. The Robots Radio Discord. There's a link in the show notes that you can just search it. It shows up at robotsradio.net if you want to go to the website and find it that way. So, yeah, come join us on the Discord if you haven't already in the time that it's been since you wrote this. We have one more. This one's from Kayla Elizabeth Art in the US, who writes, love this podcast. I've listened to every single episode of the Mass Effect Lorecast. And first off, I want to say thank you for using gender neutral terms when referring to Commander Shepard. We try to do this as much as we can, although sometimes I just get a picture of like my most recent playthrough in my head and the character that I was playing. And so I'll just say he or she. But thank you for noticing that. We do try. It feels inclusive and it is refreshing to not hear about Bro Shep as if he's the only Commander Shepard like most other Mass Effect content. It's genuinely hard to find Mass Effect creators, which is mostly male dominated, make sure that their content is inclusive. So I really appreciate it. Secondly, I love the content. It's thoughtful. And I love how much Sam goes into deep dives into the lore. It is tiding me over until the next game. And I'm glad that you're still finding new content to cover. Would love to hear more about Mass Effect 5 theories. Thanks to both of you. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully we get a little drip feed some more info about that. But Kayla and AMF, thank you so much for taking the time to leave a rating and review. If you do the same thing on Apple Podcasts with 5 stars, we will read it out on a future episode of the show. You can also rate us on Spotify. All of that stuff helps us a ton. So thank you for taking the time to do that. All right. We've got some more questions. We got some more digging to do. So let's move on with the rest of the show.
Spit it out. Or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
All right, we're back. Sam, I know you're just bubbling over with questions. You got anything else you want to ask?
I am. And you know, I had a specific thing that I wanted to dive into. But first, you know, that Ashley versus Caden question that you asked in the mid-break had me thinking, and I think a lot of our listeners would want to know as well. Audimus, you're an OG player from day one.
He's like,
I'm a journalist by trade, if you can't tell. But it might be a little hard to recall your very first playthrough, or maybe it wasn't your first playthrough, but your canon playthrough, the one that you like the most and the decisions that you stick with most of the time. What are some of those? I mean, do you kill Rex on Vermeier? Do you let him live?
What about the Rachni Queen?
What about the Rachni Queen?
Nobody's debating
council?
That one anymore.
That first playthrough was so many years ago, so many playthroughs ago.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember that I saved Ashley because I romanced her. But I think Rex died, actually, in my first playthrough.
Wow.
Because I did his side mission, but then I forgot to open up the locker that had the armor in it and just left. So I wasn't able to save Rex. So yeah, that was awkward.
What about the ending?
Because that was,
what ending did you first go with?
I think I went with Synthesis just because the game was telling me it was the best one. I have opinions about that, but I picked it because it seemed to be the best one presented at the time. And it is Mass Effect's official happy ending, in a way. I mean, everyone kind of runs off into the sunset singing Kumbaya, and it's only treated as not a good ending because Shepard doesn't live through it. But anyway, I'm going to stop because I'll start ranting about the ending again.
That kind of brings me to my next question. You know, you've read through the Codex so many times. Have you ever, now that you know what you know, and you know far more now than you did when you first played through it, now that you know all of this, has that changed your opinions on any key big decisions in the game?
That is a good question.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Honestly, I think that the thing that really impressed me after reading the Codex was, well, especially in Mass Effect 1, just how much they respected the lore that they wrote. I think that there were some hand-wavy moments, especially in Mass Effect 3. I think they started playing a bit hard and loose with the rule of cool. But I was very impressed overall with just how much they kind of stick to the rules that they established. And I don't really think that there's anything that's in the Codex that makes me think, like, wow, they really bungled that. But I do think that there is just so much interesting stuff in there that is never explored in the games. Like the fact that the Presidium has a night cycle. Wouldn't it be awesome to see the Presidium at night? Like, that would be amazing. I think that for me, the Codex is such an interesting way of building foundational content that expands what we already know. And that's kind of what I'm working on right now, is thinking about, okay, how can Mass Effect 1 be more of itself by taking elements from 2 and 3 and making it feel the same, but also a better realized, unified, cohesive version of the trilogy, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I mean, they definitely expand things in 2 and 3 beyond the scope of what we start with 1. I suppose you could even take, like, some of the races that show up later, or some of the...
I would even say
some of the just like bits of things that become more important as the series goes on, and just kind of foreshadow them better through certain kinds of quest designs or side quests or locations you can go to in the space map. I mean, this is, I'm just spitballing here, but like
That's part of the subject of an ongoing project that you're working on, right? The diversification project?
Yeah. So the diversification project is kind of like my first foray into building my own huge mod. And that's what Tidius and I are working on. Tidius, the Creative Space Expansion mod. So he's working on the Mass Effect 3 version and I'm working on the Mass Effect 1 version. And we're kind of like sandwiching Mass Effect 2 with awesomeness.
So what is the scope of this? What will the mod give somebody who downloads this once this is finalized?
Okay, so the scope of the mod is kind of different between the LE1 and LE3 versions because the games have kind of different issues. So for the LE3 version, a lot of that is about making your... doing kind of what Take Earth Back does with war asset representation and bridging that throughout the rest of the game. So it's about making it feel like the decisions that you make throughout the game have an impact when you return back to the Citadel. Seeing the assets that you recruit appearing on the Citadel, seeing the results of those decisions playing out in the lives of ordinary people, rebalancing populations so that there's a less human dominance, adding in more ambient level events, just things like that. So just make the game feel more immersive and feel... It's kind of doing that kind of expanded galaxy mod thing where you kind of see the Reap of War unfolding in real time and making the world feel like it's bigger than you are. So that's the LE3 version. The LE1 version is kind of about fixing the corners that they cut because of memory limitations in the original. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you go into CSEC Academy in Mass Effect 1 and look at the NPCs there, you will notice that every single Turian, every single human, every single Solarian are all just clones of the exact same dude because they were just reusing assets over and over. Uh-huh. And once you start noticing that they're only using one outfit per species, they're only using the same hairstyles, like it really starts to feel like there's a lot of missed opportunities here. So what I've been doing as the kind of broad goal of the mod is to go through the entire game, top to bottom, and rebalance the entire population and diversify it on a very deep level. So I'm doing things like adding more Hanar and Elcor and Volus. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, there are only 3 Elcor in the entirety of Mass Effect 1, and 2 of them are in the same room.
Yeah, that totally tracks.
That needs fixing.
Right.
And so I'm doing things like just adding in lots more of those. I'm kind of rebalancing the population so that you're kind of getting even numbers of the council races and humans, and then getting lower numbers of Elcor, Hanar, and Volus. And then you're seeing some Krogan sprinkled around. And I'm even putting a couple of Quarians around that you can spot under certain conditions. That's kind of the general scope of what I'm doing there. But then beyond that, I'm also thinking about, okay, how can the game feel a lot better just in terms of how it flows and how it connects to the other games? So I've been doing things like making it so that when Admiral Hackett calls you on the Normandy, you go into the comm room and physically speak to him via a hologram. It doesn't really make any sense why you're kind of speaking to a disembodied voice when the comm room is literally right there. Right. Why don't you just walk 5 steps over and talk to him face to face?
So do you use the hologram model for Mass Effect 3 then?
No, I'm using I'm using his physical model, but I'm using the Mass Effect 1 version of the hologram. So it's like that sort of like red VHS look. Uh-huh. I think works kind of well because it means that you don't, it still respects the fact that you don't really see what he looks like. You can kind of make out that he's like a grizzled old dude, but you won't actually physically see him until later on, which I think is kind of respectful to the lore and the vanilla version of the game. And then I'm also doing things like rebalancing the way that quests play out. So for example, something that's always annoyed me about the way that some quests work is that they don't really make sense as to where you get them. So Chorban, for example, is scanning a keeper in the middle of the council chambers. So, right. I'm not sure how he thought he was going to get away with that. But after looking in the files, it turns out that the original place that he was supposed to be was at the base of the council tower with the keeper where Avena is. And he was supposed to be scanning that keeper. And the reason that they moved him was because they wanted players to be able to instantly interact with him after coming out of the first meeting with Saren, because he's straight there. Otherwise, you would go to the fast travel terminal, potentially fast travel just straight down to Corvus, then miss him entirely.
Yeah.
So, but what I feel, I kind of disagree with this, because I feel like there's already two different ways to start this quest. You can talk to Jalid or you can talk to Chorbat. So I've moved him back to the original position, and I've actually found that this makes the quest feel a lot less linear, and you can kind of approach it however you want. And then, no. So go on.
I was just going to ask first, before you went on, how did you find that out, that that's why the devs put Chorbin where they did?
So when you're looking under the files, we have this thing called the sequence editor, which allows us to view the Kismet sequencing logic that BioWare used to script events. And a lot of that stuff has comments left in. So when we were talking to BioWare, because I kind of reached out to BioWare and got us like talking about how we were going to help modding get set for Legendary Edition, one of the things that we asked them was, could you please leave all the comments and like sequence node positions in, so that when we look at the stuff under the hood, we can kind of see your like your comments and your thoughts on like how everything should be laid out. And as part of that, I could see like comments saying like, we've moved him here so that the player can not do this, or I can kind of infer logic by seeing that he's tagged SDA-20 Chorbin, and SDA-20 is the name for the Presidium, and SDA-70 is for the Citadel Tower. So I can kind of figure out things about where things are just by kind of inferring things under the hood.
Did you ever come across any of those comments that made you laugh? I mean, were any of those comments pretty funny?
very human things, like this freaking dude doesn't seem to spawn correctly in this location, so I had to move him over here.
Yeah, there's stuff like, you know, make sure this flag is always set, otherwise Shorben's arms will like fold inwards or something
right,
like that.
Right.
But there's some fun comments there. Like I saw one the other day where there was like a plot check in Mass Effect 3 between like Ashley being alive and Caden being alive, and some dev had put next to the Caden alive, fuck yeah. Which I thought was funny.
Oh, that's great. That's
yeah. Great. Clearly a Caden stan in the level design team.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like you've got your hands full. Do you have other future plans? Do you have other things that you're just like, how does this work for you? Do you have like lots of ideas and you're like, okay, this is the thing I can work on now, but now next after that would be this thing and then this thing and this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of assumed.
Yeah. There's the thing is, with a project like this, there is so much work. I mean, I've been working on this mod since February, and it took me until August just to build out my asset library. And so only for the last couple of months have I been rebuilding the Citadel, and I'm still probably about 2 or 3 weeks away from finishing the first pass of the Citadel, because the way that I've been doing it is I've been kind of going through and placing all of the NPCs and figuring out like all their animations and like when they should be spawning and all that other stuff. And then on my second pass, I'm going to go through and decorate them with their own outfits and tints and hairstyles and skin tones and all that other stuff, because that stuff is less important than figuring out your overall layout and structure.
Sure.
So once that's down, I think about the population balance, yeah, then I can go through and decorate it. So that's my plan right now, is to, for N7 day, release the Citadel update. So the Citadel should hopefully be fully done by then.
Would you put a human on board somewhere that looks like Sam?
Isn't Comrade Verna already on the Citadel?
Nice.
Not in everyone's game.
So beyond this one, what's your like next dream thing, like, and you don't have to go in super high detail, but are there some other things out there that you're like, it'd be really cool to start working on this thing or something else?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I feel like you kind of have to stop somewhere, otherwise it will go on forever.
Yeah.
And for me, bringing like bringing Mass Effect 1 up to the standard that I want it to be has been a lifelong dream for me. I've wanted to do so. I do remember playing through Mass Effect 1, like my final time playing through it before the Legendary Edition came out. I played through it thinking, man, I really wish there were female Turians in Mass Effect 1. Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing I did. So like the mod is currently out in alpha, and the thing that it does right now is adds female Turians all over the game. So you can see them in CSEC, you can see them in the Embassy, Obsidian, on Uncharted Worlds, in mercenary gangs, all sorts. And so I'm kind of like just bringing that kind of diversification across the whole game.
That's awesome.
So I, at the moment, I have so many ideas that are all kind of being lumped into this one mod that it's kind of hard for me to see what I'm going to do next. There are a couple of other things that I want to do, but they're smaller. Like this is, I would consider this to be like my last big project before I kind of just go on maintenance mode with my mods, because I feel like I've already got a fairly good library of mods now, and the more mods you release, the more mods you have to maintain, and so it becomes a pretty stressful job if you release too many. So I can tell you about two mods that I want to release. The things that are kind of holding this back are some technical limitations. So the first thing I want to do is something called the Geth consistency mod. Because at the moment it irritates me that the Geth don't look the same throughout the different games. Like the Geth Prime in ME 1 is white, but in ME 3 it's red. Mm. Or the Geth Destroyer in ME 1 is kind of like gray and orange, but in ME 2 it's also white. So I kind of want to just make a consistent design between them through all the games. The issue with this being that the Geth are in so many files that shipping all of those files would be a compatibility nightmare. For such a small edit, like literally all I need to do is go into like one material file out of like thousands and thousands of properties within a file just to change that one thing. So that's on hold until we can figure out a way to just kind of like build a patching utility that can just kind of go through and correct all of those things.
Right. So you need the tool to do it because it's complex.
Yeah. And part of the issues with working in the Mass Effect games is that, like with the Bethesda games, all of the assets are kind of loaded individually. It's part of the reason why loading times take so long in Bethesda games, because their engine is really well designed for modding. But in the Mass Effect games, everything is kind of just lumped into the same files, which means that one modder who edits one thing in this one file would have to merge their changes with somebody else's edits that file in order for both mods to work together. Mm-hmm. Which creates a lot of issues, because if you've got three different mods all editing one file, you now have to make different combinations of compatibility patches for those. So then imagine you've got four or five mods touching that one file. It gets very, very, very stressful, which is why compatibility is kind of the thing that holds a lot of us in check when we're working on different things. Otherwise, it would just be a chaotic free-for-all.
These are concerns that other games that are well modded, like Bethesda games, don't have to worry about, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's different for every game, but for the Bethesda games, you generally don't have to worry about, like, imagine if in like Fallout 3, if you edited like an NPC in the middle of Megaton, that meant that anybody else who wanted to edit any other NPC in like the middle of Megaton would have to make a compatibility patch with your file.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it's like in Mass Effect.
In Fallout, in the Bethesda games, it's like you load mods, and if there's compatibility issues, you just choose which one loads first and which one loads second, and then they end up with like a certain priority level, and one of them will work and the other just doesn't.
There's so many of those mods are reliant on script extenders. Mm-hmm. Is there anything like that for Mass Effect, or is the way that Mass Effect is built, it doesn't really allow a script extender mod to broaden horizons?
Well, so the thing about script extender is that it's kind of similar to how we make modding work in the first place. Like the our version of a script extender is basically our DLC loader. So we're able to load and mount new DLC content through our mod loader. So there's different things that we do at runtime which allow the game to run mods. That isn't particularly helpful for compatibility, though. that it's more convenient for the end user rather than for modders. So we have made some steps to make things easy. So for example, the LE3 community patch has something called the framework, which if you're not familiar, was a refactoring of many of the files in the game. So what the developers of that mod did was they went through a bunch of files and they found all the NPCs that exist within those files. So plot-related NPCs like Trainer or Bailey or the counselors, and stripped them out of that file, created new bio NPC files, and then created links that streamed them into those files, which means that you can now edit NPCs in the ME3 using the framework without having to worry about editing level files.
Right, right. You can open the little drawer for each character rather than opening the whole big old bin of everything.
Exactly, yeah. So you only have to worry about making a compatibility patch between two people who edit the same character, which is much less likely. So it's a much easier time in that regard. We also have something called merge mods. And merge modding was a feature that our lead toolset developer created, which basically allows you to merge changes into like the core base game files that can't be put in DLC mods because, you know, they're foundational to how the game works. And so that allows you to do things like merge in script extensions and changes to like fundamental game behavior. So that kind of stuff just wasn't possible before because, you know, otherwise everybody would just be fighting over using the same three files. But there are things that we can do as modders on the toolset side to make that experience easier. But unfortunately, we're still faced with the grim reality that we have built a very complicated modding system on top of games that actively resist being modded. And so it's kind of just the thing you have to deal with. There's not really any way around that, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's so much to this. Man, it's kind of mind-boggling. As somebody who doesn't do this, like this work, how much actually goes into it and how much of a passion project this is, you know, for you and the other people that you work with. We've got to wrap up the show. We're getting to the end of it. And I know it's extremely late where you are. We've got like two more questions. First of all, because this is so big, are there ways that people who want to help can get involved, or are there ways that they can like donate? Like, do you have a Patreon? Do you ever take any personal support from the work that you put in?
Are you talking about my mod specifically?
Your mods, yeah. Like you as a mod creator, are there opportunities for other people to get involved with the modding to kind of take on some of that workload and work with you, or are there ways that they can say thanks and donate to a Patreon or some way of showing some support?
Yeah,
because a lot of what you're doing is free. Like it's all passion, right?
Yes, and I mean I have never done any of this for any kind of monetary gain. That's not important to me. I think that if anybody wanted to help, they could send me their ideas of ways that they think that the like Mass Effect 1 in particular could be improved. I do have a donation link that comes up when you download my mods. Obviously, no pressure, but if you want to support me, feel free to send me money for a coffee.
I'd
be very appreciative.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Awesome. I know, Sam, awesome. You've got one last question.
I do, yes. So, Autumus, you're intimately involved with the Mass Effect modding community. You've got your ear to the ground there. Are there any big things being worked on that Mass Effect players can expect in the near future and that you are clear to talk about?
Things to get excited about, maybe?
Oh, can I spoil somebody else's work? Yes, I absolutely can. Okay.
You can. All right.
Yes. Okay. So there are some amazing projects being worked on. Just absolutely incredible projects. I'm going to shout out two by fellow Mass Effect 1 modders that I have huge respect for. So the first one is a talent overhaul project being worked on by a modder called Nighthawk. And basically what he's doing is, I mean, it's insane. I have no idea how he's doing it, but he is porting powers from Mass Effect 2 and 3 into 1. So you're getting things like combat drone, charge, overload, incinerate, cryoblast. Like all of this stuff is being moved into Mass Effect 1. And it's incredible the way that he's managed to get this to work. and it really makes the game look incredible. Like, seeing Shepard run around in Mass Effect 1 with tech armor, get excited for that, because it's coming soon. And I'm very much looking forward to playing that. The second one is by a modder called Vegs, and he is working on restoring Calliston, which is the planet that eventually became the place where you pick up the Ara. Calliston was a pretty huge planet. I believe it had roughly the same amount of dialogue as Novaria, and it was around the same size. And there's a lot of stuff in there, and we have access to pretty much the entire script. It has to be translated because it only ships in localized languages. But at this point, we've pretty much translated most of it, and we've started like looking into how it can be restored. And this modder is currently working on restoring the entire planet, which is, I don't know how he's going to do it, but he's making great progress so far. And if you go to the Mass Effect Modding Discord, you can check out the Developer Showcases channel to see all of the things that people work being worked on, including those two mods. But yeah, I think that the Calliston mod is a long ways out. Talent the whole mod coming fairly soon.
Now, Calliston, is this a brand new planet that players could go to?
Yes, well, sort of. It's basically turning Therum back into Calliston.
Because oh, I see.
Calliston was a mining planet, primarily dominated by Edgefell, Ashland Energy. You would go to a place called Throwdown Plaza, and you would basically deal with, like, it was a very, like, Wild West, like, Firefly-esque sort of planet. There was that whole thing going over, like, gangs and cartels and things like that. And that was where you originally recruited the Ara.
So, and it was teased in the very first Mass Effect trailer. Yes. I remember they're like charting new course for Calliston, and then we never went there.
Yeah, and a lot of the like early gameplay demos had Calliston content. And the final area that you go to and bring down the sky, where you know fight Balak and the Batarians and free the hostages, that was the hub for Calliston. Like, obviously, that a lot of the rooms aren't there, but the main room, that was it. That was Calliston's Throwdown Plaza. Hmm. So there's a lot of really cool stuff that's been discovered in Calliston's files that should hopefully be restored in this mod. For example, Blue Hannah. Turns out that there was a Blue Hannah that ran the Med Bay. So Blue Hannah canon. Yeah. Yeah, there was so much. There was this
Manar of Wars. I'm sorry, go on.
Oh no.
There was like an ambush with these mercenaries that had been hired by Saren, and one of you them talks to you like he's a sheriff. He kind of talks like this. He's doing some kind of weird sort of action. I don't know. It's a very
from Texas.
It's close enough, right. There, Commander Shepard. Like it's a weird.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that surprised me most about it was that one of the characters on Calliston was a character called Fred Mazai. And you may recognize Fred Mazai from being a very random mention in the Shadow Broker like video terminals. And it turns out that Fred Mazai was like this sort of comic relief character on Calliston that they then repurposed into Elias Kellum's lawyer in Mass Effect 2. So that's going to be an interesting thread to reconnect when we're still in Calliston.
Wow. Talk about like minute details that they've repurposed. That's awesome, man. I cannot wait to see this Calliston mod. And I forget the other name. What's the name of the mod? Bringing the powers back to...
I don't think it has a name yet, but we'll call it Talent Overhaul Mod.
That is going to be insane. And for all of our listeners, yeah, you probably heard this here first, so...
Yeah, so
news about it coming soon.
I just noticed that you did share a bunch of images in the chat for the Zoom. Do you want to take a minute and just kind of comment on each of them? We can kind of go through showcase them.
Please do. I've got 10 minutes.
Okay, so here, I've got them all in order, the order that you link them in, and I'm going to go ahead and share those on screen. And I'm going to have to adjust the size of this a little bit. But why don't you go ahead and start sharing? First, go ahead and just... Tell us what you got here.
Okay, so this was a screenshot that I... this is coming from Gravel, so whether this is the most recent screenshot I took. So this is the back alley wards area on the Citadel, which... The light's gone off again. So that area on the wards is always empty other than when you go and meet Tally. So I figured, hey, this would actually be a really good place for kind of like gangs to kind of hang out and discuss unsavory deals and do crime.
And do crime, right.
so that's that was a Solarian that I set up who's kind of doing a smoking animation that I ported from ME3. I was celebrating the milestone of figuring out how to get the cigarette to attach to his hand.
Nice.
Because that was a very complicated process. and I set up just a little orange spotlight next to him that really illuminates him in a very cool way.
Cool. Yeah, and people don't realize how much some of the stuff takes to get to work together because it's not just built.
One NPC took me 7 hours.
That's insane. Yeah, look at him. Look at him. He's so cool, hanging up against the wall with this cigarette in his hand. All right, what's the next one here?
I have no idea. I'm going to have to see it first.
Yeah, I'm going down the list. Do you see it? Okay, go ahead.
There he is. This is one of the Quarians that you can find hanging around in Mass Effect 1. I'm making sure not to add too many because obviously Quarians are not a common sight on the Citadel, but I thought it would be cool if when you're running around, occasionally you may spot one in the wild. That's a male Quarian. Mm-hmm. If you're eagle-eyed enough, you may spot him.
Cool.
Now, this is the same location. It looks like the same location in Mass Effect 1 where you run into the man who supposedly knows your mom if you chose Spacer.
Yes. Yes, that's the Wards Axis Corridor.
And the thought came to my mind, you probably know far better than I do. Mm-hmm. Given cut content, did BioWare ever plan on revealing who Shepard's father was?
I have not seen any evidence of that anywhere, no. Well, it's interesting because this is just a hunch on my part, but I think that they left that ambiguous so that players could decide on their own who Shepard's father was. Like for example, I have my own headcanon that Shepard's father was friends with Anderson and they deployed together during the First Contact War and Shepard's father died during the First Contact War. Mm-hmm. And that leads my Shepard to have quite a big prejudice towards Turians during Mass Effect 1 that kind of improves throughout the game.
It would also explain Anderson's relationship with Shepard having known his father.
Yeah, and also why he's kind of like a father figure, exactly,
right,
yeah.
Right.
I don't think that I have seen zero comments of Shepard's father anywhere, which is very interesting.
Amazing, amazing. Well, here's the next image. We've got some individuals sitting around a table.
So do you recognize this area? Because it's been very overhauled. There's a little clue on the wall there that might tell you what this is.
This is not the consort's office, is it?
It is not, no. It's in the wards.
It's got that like plus sign on the right wall.
This is very heavily overhauled, isn't it? This is Dr. Yep. Michelle's office?
It is, yes. This is the entrance area to her office. I noticed that when you walk in, there is this huge area with nothing in it. So I thought it'd be quite nice to make a little waiting room.
That makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it works great. This is the first of several areas in the game where I'm kind of placing objects and furniture to make an empty area feel more alive, because it kind of needs it. There are some places in the game where they just didn't place any props and ambient furniture, and so you've got like someone's shop or clinic that is just empty. And here's another screenshot. I've actually given Dr. Michelle some patients to work with.
Yeah.
So there's some people lying in the beds.
Yeah.
Do not think too hard about what that claw is for.
Right. I was about to point it out, but yeah.
I was thinking tattoo removal. maybe that's
yeah.
It.
Here's another one with.
Imagine that's what Dr. Michelle's actual specialty was. She's not a real doctor. She just removes tattoos.
I can see it. Maybe it's Turian face paint removal for those in sketchy enterprises.
Yeah. So you have two images here with patients on beds. Do the patients change? Are they the same patients all the time?
So at the moment they stay the same. In a later update, I'm going to figure out a way of kind of randomizing NPC positions.
Oh, that's cool.
Placing NPCs in Mass Effect 1 is really complicated, much more complicated than 3. So the work that goes into it is much more time consuming. So I probably won't make like different versions of NPCs and stuff, but I might figure out a way to change the way that they get placed into the different animations so that they can. So that every time you come in, you'll maybe instead of seeing a Turian laying there, you'll see an Asari laying there.
It feels more natural because it's not always the same person. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What about this image? We have individuals looking at consoles on the sides of the room.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So this is Barlavon's office. So labeled in the game as the bank, yet somehow there is no banking going on in there. So I've added some ATM machines. If you zoom in, you may see something behind Barlavon there.
It looks like a terminal. That would not happen to
me. No, but right behind him.
Right behind him?
Yeah, right behind him on the left and right.
Oh, the individuals?
Security mech.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've added some security mechs from Mass Effect 2.
Oh, that's what those are.
I thought would be an interesting way of kind of unifying the trilogy a bit.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense in a bank.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Cool. All right. And then we've got one of my favorite people or types of people.
So this was an interesting one. So it turns out that Han Olo's appearance has been bugged since the original release of Mass Effect 1. That is what he's supposed to look like.
Really?
Wow. Yep. So in this image, he's wearing white and red armor that almost looks similar to, imagine if Ashley's armor was a little bit more red and you put it on a Volus.
Yeah, kind of. It's supposed to match the scientist uniform that everyone else is wearing.
Huh.
That kind of like white and red style. But yeah, that was supposed to be his appearance, but it just got referenced incorrectly. So he was using like the default Volus appearance by mistake.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay.
And they never caught it, even in Legendary Edition.
Yeah. Weird. All right. And now we have another one. What's this one about?
So this is another bugged one. So it also turned out that Morlan was using, what's his name? I've forgotten his name. Shells, the gambler's appearance. His actual head is supposed to be that. So that's another one that I fixed.
So, and the head was just like sitting in the files and just wasn't accessed.
Yeah. This wasn't actually in Legendary Edition. I had to go and harvest this out of Mass Effect 1, pull it over into Legendary Edition because it wasn't. It was left over in one of their files, but it wasn't being correctly referenced. So that's what he was supposed to look like this whole time.
That's a cool texture, like the cracks and stuff on the face.
Yeah, there's cracks. It looks like the blue is underneath the cracks on Morlan's face. He actually looks a lot less friendly.
Yeah, well, he's supposed to be kind of like a shady, kind of slightly psychotic black market arms dealer. But he kind of comes across as being kind of actually friendly.
Yeah.
All right.
I think the appearance layers his personality a bit more.
All right, so what's this next one?
This one's exciting. In Legendary Edition, for some reason, the controllable tank in the docking bay, in the garage in Novaria, was missing. So for my mod, I brought it back. So now you can use the turret again.
So you can actually hop in the turret when you're getting the garage pass and you're leaving Novaria.
Yep.
You've made it so that players can actually hop in the turret of this massive vehicle there in the garage.
And absolutely wreck some Geth, yes.
sweet. All right, now we have some the comparisons between face textures.
Yes, so with the Asari has unique textures in Mass Effect 1 that they changed in Mass Effect 2 and 3. So in Legendary Edition, they unified the Asari's appearance by porting those appearances back, but they didn't update all of the like morph information for the faces, which led to Asari looking a bit different. So for plot-based Asari, I haven't done this for every single one because it's too time-consuming, but for the cinematic conversation Asari, I've gone back and restored their original appearance by kind of changing the color and scalar values of their head morph to make them look like they did in the original. So you're kind of getting that marriage of Legendary Edition and the original trilogy.
Nice. It's like they were more blue than they were supposed to
be. Yeah, yeah. I think that the like original base texture was more of like a yellow color, but the one in Mass Effect 2 and 3 was like a more pinkish color. So it ended up, when backporting that, it just kind of hue shifts all the Asari.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it, but now that you bring this up, it's one of those things that I think on playing Legendary Edition, I was like, were they this blue? And it like subconsciously, I was like, it seems more blue than I remember. I don't know.
The textures look far higher quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very interesting just how like tweaking some values actually brings the detail up. And there's another one. So this is the embassy receptionist. Yeah. This one was a bit harder to do. I kind of had to take some creative license here, but you can kind of see.
It looks so much better. It really is an improvement.
It truly does. Yeah, I'm looking at them side by side where we have Mass Effect Legendary Edition, and then the new and improved textures from the Diversification Project. And this Asari's scalp looks so much more like 3D. Like it pops out at you, the texture of these semi-cartilaginous tentacles, right?
Yeah, even the like just the texture of the skin. The skin looks more, porous and cracked and
detailed. Yeah, there's kind of like a face shine. I found this cool technique where if you set the face shine value really high, but then set the like color of it to like almost the color of the skin, but slightly different, you actually get this much more like defined look on the face that kind of matches a little bit more of what they were going for in the original. That kind of got destroyed a bit by Legendary Edition because everything in Legendary Edition looks a little bit too flat. So just playing around with those values kind of really brings back some of that detail that's lost.
It looks more natural.
Now this next one I'm greatly looking forward to.
Yeah, tell us about this one.
So, once I found out about the blue Hannah, I felt like, it was fair game that we started getting some rainbow Hannah. So
all the colors of the rainbow, like Skittles.
Exactly, yes. So, because I'm adding some many more Hannah to the game, and they've only got one appearance, it just felt right that they need to diversify as well. So, pictured there are six forbidden snacks.
Nice. Pink, blue, green, purple, red, and another variation of pink, I guess. I'm not great with colors, but
Hanar gummies would sell pretty well.
What would they taste like? Oh.
Squid.
Oh man. All right. And then we've got a variety of different pantsuits.
Yes. So another modder called Zeb created a few new outfits based on cut Mass Effect concept art for humans, mm-hmm. and actually made them into wearable outfits in the game. And I asked if I could have permission to take the model and textures and convert them into a tintable material that the NPCs use. So I'm actually going to be integrating this into the game to kind of give some characters more varied appearances. So this one in particular is going to be kind of used as a business suit. So like Emily Wong is going to wear this. Some of the business women on Liberia will wear it. Maybe a couple of diplomats will wear it. And that's just one of three new outfits that I'm adding, which should reduce the proliferation of women in dresses in Mass Effect because there are too many.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, it makes sense that they wear something like this. It totally matches. And then this is the last one. What are we looking at here?
Yes. So female Batarians are coming to Diversification Project. On the left-hand side, you can see a female Batarian there.
Yeah.
And I'm also one of the goals I have for this mod is to use the existing assets that exist for Mass Effect 2 and 3 to give each race a bit more of a defined and bespoke visual aesthetic. So I feel like this armor that Grey has in Mass Effect 3 kind of really exemplifies that Batarian aesthetic of everything kind of feeling a bit like bulky and brutal. And so I feel like by giving certain species certain designs and like gun models and colors, it can make each species feel like it has their own personality rather than the kind of homogenized mishmash of like reused assets that exist in the original games.
That's awesome.
I love that.
That's awesome.
I love that idea. Yeah. Well, I'm going to download this diversification project, Alpha, and the one for 3 as well, myself, probably as soon as we're done here, and give it a whirl. And I admittedly haven't tried a lot of videos yet, but hearing all the work that you've put into it, I think I have to now. I gotta go check it out.
You gotta at least go check out the trailer that I put out. You'll see just how much it will improve your game.
Absolutely. Well, awesome. Audimus, thank you so much for joining us, especially with how late it is there in the UK. And I know that our listeners are probably ecstatic to hear not just about the mods that you've worked on, but about some of the exciting stuff coming up for the Mass Effect community.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's been a great time.
Before we go, do you want to share ways that people can reach out to you or the best way to keep track of what you're doing and stay connected?
Yes. So if you want to keep up with Mass Effect Mods, I run the Mass Effect Modding Discord, which is discord.gg/MassEffectMods. And you can catch up with all of your favorite mod developers, see what people are working on. And hey, if you want to learn to mod yourself, we will help you. We're always interested in having new people join the community.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks for all your work. We love this stuff. I mean, we eat this stuff up. So we really do appreciate it. And you taking the time to do this. Sam, you got anything you want to share before we head out?
I just wanted to, also thank you for all your work on the mods that, like we talked about, modders do this for free. I mean, they accept support here and there, but this is passion projects. And it's awesome to know that, at least one modder I know is an OG Mass Effect fan and just as much of a lore nerd as I am. And that much was evident anyway from some of the projects that you've worked on, not just with you, but with Tidius as well. So, very happy to talk with you. And I am streaming, of course, so if anyone listening to this would like to stop by my streams and catch the tail end of my first FimShep playthrough ever. I can't believe it's taken this long to get to a FimShep playthrough, but I am streaming every Saturday. That is 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern, and I am considering a second Mass Effect stream of the week, but still working out a schedule. So at any rate, if you'd like to, you can follow me on Twitch and Twitter at N7TheLegend.
Awesome. And my stuff's all at robotsradio.net, including my other podcasts and the other podcasts on this network. So go check that stuff out. You can always join us for this show at twitch.tv/robotsradio or check out my game streams. I've been playing all sorts of different stuff over there. Cyberpunk and I played a new mod. Speaking about mods, the Whispering Hills mod for Fallout 4. I tried out earlier today. It's like it's spooky dooky, it's creepy stuff, and we're coming up on creepy season. So come join us for all that stuff. Thank you guys for being here. We really do appreciate it. And stay safe out there in the universe. It's a crazy place where people keep changing their skin textures and stuff. Who knows what's gonna happen? All right, we'll see you next time. Bye everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.